give me some time to receive the message of being free.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABA Zoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, we hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Kathy G. of the Fifth Tradition Group. She's got quite a tribe who've come to join us. We welcome all of you guys. We are looking forward to Kathy's story. I'm going to turn it over to you right now, Kathy. Welcome.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for asking me to share my story tonight. My name is Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I just want to say that, you know, I recognize most of you on the call tonight, and it just means so much to me that I've developed a community of a loving family and Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is February 15th, 2019. My home group is the Fifth Tradition out of the Atlanta area. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other women, and I'm grateful to be sober today. So, you know, of course, I have a little bit of the nervous jitters, which I think is normal when you're new telling your story. And because, you know, I've changed so much since I told my story the last time, and that story doesn't feel as authentic and relevant tonight as it did then. So I'm just going to see what happens, and hopefully some solution and some message will come out of that. So, Tim, I really appreciated you sharing about how our personal stories tell about our adventures to finding God. And I started thinking about my adventures of losing God that led me here. So I won't go into too much history, but before I get sober, I will tell you in my story, I will tell you that I was born in Los Angeles, California. I'm the first child of four. And I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mother was the alcoholic, and my parents divorced when I was very young, and I'm told that my father was addicted as well, but I wasn't raised by him, so I wasn't exposed to that. But the reason why I wanted to bring that up is not because I have the propensity or genetic predisposition to be an alcoholic, but because that experience shaped my idea of what an alcoholic was, and therefore, you know, I decided early on in life that that under no circumstances was going to happen to me. And so the alcoholism that I was exposed to was of the periodic binge crazy type, with lots and lots of drama, lots and lots of arguing and violence, lots of moves, lots of geographics, lots of breakups and getting back togethers, and just lots of chaos. You know, I remember just feeling like I didn't know what kind of a house I was going to come home to on a daily basis. And as a result of that, I became very adept at reading and watching and reading and watching, because nothing was ever overtly said. And even when things were said, they made no sense to me because they fought about the most obscure, bizarre, crazy stuff. So there was just a lot of things that I didn't understand. And so as I became a teenager and started to have my own relationships, I remember making a really conscious decision that I wasn't going to drink. And because drinking meant people that were crazy and violent and left each other and caused lots of drama and were out of control. And so my coping, I guess, was to be as perfect as I could and always be in control. And so, you know, yes, I experimented with alcohol, but I never liked it. I didn't enjoy it. And I chose to, I guess, control and, you know, self-reliance and all that based on doing what I thought society said made a happy, content, you know, successful person. And so my go-to was, you know, education and relationships and marriage and having a baby and, you know. So, but what I never realized during all those years of not drinking was that, I mean, I guess I did realize that I never, like all of you have said so many times in your stories, something just was never right, that you never felt comfortable in your own skin. You always felt like a round peg in a square hole to a secret that you were never given the, you know, instruction manual for living. And I just kept thinking if I run harder and faster and do more things that somehow someday I'm going to have this idea of happiness that was always like the carrot on the stick. And just like it says in our book, you know, we tried to wrest satisfaction out of life the best we could and found it wanting. That was my story. So any momentary sort of feelings of fleeting happiness were soon replaced by some type of deflation. And what I was really running on, of course, was ego and fear. And the way I decided to deal with things not going my way after a time was to eventually just get sort of irritable, restless, and discontented with the current situation and decide that, you know, I just made a mistake with that husband. You know, I just made a mistake living over there. I made a mistake with that job. I made a mistake, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I like to characterize my personality as getting really uptight, really wound up. And the only way that I could find relief from that uptight, wound up state was to take an eraser and wipe out that life and run to the next situation. And then I would gain power and a feeling of control and excitement by the anticipation of what I could create next. So in other words, my favorite place to be was on my way to somewhere else. And that's what I did over and over and over. And finally, I would say, you know, and still not drinking, you know, doing all the things, still wanting to have all the check boxes perfect, and thinking that success was just right around the corner, you know, and it felt like it for a little while until it didn't. And that, to me, describes an alcoholic mind. And so finally, you know, I thought on the last go around before I started drinking alcoholically that I had all the check boxes marked off. And believe it or not, and as I heard a speaker tell recently, you know, my desperation and my craving for alcohol started with living in a gated golf course community in a beautiful home with a pool and a husband and plenty of money and plenty of travel and a successful career, and those drinks started becoming very interesting during that marriage because I realized that once again, I created this thing that I thought outside of myself that if I just carefully constructed and controlled and intended and whatever we do with that whole intention thing, to bring that into my life, which I had a habit of being able to obtain, because I'm really good at reading you, and I'm really good at following the rules, and I'm really good at doing what you want, and I'm really good at getting your validation and your approval and getting the things all just right, you know, that it wasn't working. Those feelings of restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness were coming back. And I didn't want to run away one more time, because why? How could I? I finally found everything I wanted, right? So I did all the things to try to make myself happy and successful. And then what happened was a tragedy struck my life, and my husband passed away suddenly, and from a heart attack in 2015. And I wasn't drinking very much. I didn't drink for 6 months after his death. But true to my form, you know, something is missing in my life. Something isn't right. I need to reinvent my life. And I thought shortly after that, you know, I like being partnered. I guess I'll just go find another relationship. But because I'm reacting rather than coming from this place that I come from now and the solution, which I will get to later, you know, I concoct once again this power source outside of me that once again is going to fix what's wrong in here. The difference this time, in addition to starting drinking, was that I became really unanchored from my values. I became really unanchored from my spirituality. I didn't know how this whole alchemy of grief and loss and being alone was going to manifest itself into extremely destructive decision making and alcoholism. And so I quickly met somebody and decided that I was going to start jumping on an airplane and going to a sexy location somewhere I didn't know to have sex and drink and party and have fun. And then that started winding up. And of course, that was the holy grail for me. And to the point where I sold the house, I moved away, I left my community, I left my friends, and I went into sort of this hiding where I wasn't telling anybody what was going on with me. And because I didn't know alcoholism could impact me, I thought, I'm in my 50s now. I've always had an off button. What's wrong with this? Plenty of people around the world drink every day. What's wrong with that? And I started like reading stuff about alcohol use and how, you know, people are just too uptight. People are just too puritanical here. Plenty of people drink every day around the world. What's wrong with that? And so I started rationalizing and justifying. Meanwhile, this physical allergy is taking hold of my body, and I don't understand how the obsession and the compulsion and the absolute need for alcohol is taking hold of me. But I do know this. I do know that as soon as I take that first drink, I know what all of you feel. So in other words, it's the first time in my life where I get complete and absolute relief that feels like a spiritual experience that erases and obliterates all the things that make me feel like a square peg in a round hole, separated, no community, not loved, fearful, and that I'm somehow not okay. So in other words, alcohol was my solution to help me feel okay in the world. That I understood. That became the driving force in my life to get relief from what I now know is a spiritual malady. And of course, it wasn't sustainable. Every morning, you know, here I am now in Atlanta, and every morning I'm waking up with a tap, tap, tap on my shoulder of a hangover. A tap, tap, tap on my shoulder with my late husband in my ear saying, what are you doing? With a tap, tap, tap on my shoulder that says, you're not supposed to be doing this. What are you doing? And my reply to that was, screw you. You died. Screw that. I want to do what I want. Screw you. I don't want to look at this. And furthermore, I'm terrified. Because if I start to look at the tap, 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 I will soon have to admit all the crazy stuff that I have done, and not just in the last couple of years, but my entire life to run the show that never worked. That probably meant, based on my old ideas about what I always learned and thought about myself, that you're a piece of shit, nobody's ever going to love, you're going to be all alone, and there's just absolutely no way you can extricate yourself from this situation. that became the intolerance of my world. And so I would wake up, I'm not going to drink today, just like we always hear, I don't feel good, blah, 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 kind of cobble my way through the day. And then about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, of course, the drink, I change my mind. The drink starts to seem like a good idea. And by 5 o'clock, I'm drinking, and by 10 o'clock, I'm, you know, going to bed, and basically Groundhog Day every day. And people can live like that probably forever. I don't know, you know. But for me, there's something inside of me that, again, because whatever that shiny, new, beautiful, perfect, awesome thing that I have now constructed starts to wear out, and it's just not so great anymore. And the shine wears off, and I'm just getting restless and irritable and itchy, like something's got to give, and I don't know what it's going to be, and I don't know what to do. That feeling starts to get bigger and louder, and I feel this momentum of, you know, like I'm in a cage. Like, what am I going to do? I can't. I don't want to. You know, maybe I'm starting thinking like, you know, maybe I need therapy. Maybe I need, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know I have alcoholism. I don't know I have a spiritual malady. I don't know that I'm not a victim of my circumstances. I think everything is being done to me. It's not my fault my husband died and I did all these things. True, it wasn't my fault he died. But I didn't have the tools then that I have now to deal with calamity and life happening on life's terms. So I have no choice but to react the way I've always reacted, because that's all I get to bring to the table my entire life. And so as it would happen, as it always has, that house of cards fell apart in a very quick order. And the person I was with started to rage at me and get emotionally abusive, and I felt very unsafe, and that became intolerable. And right then and there, I thought, you know what, I got to do something here, and I don't know what to do. So I did go to a therapist. I finally was ready to be honest. All this stuff started coming out, like I'm vomiting, like all this pain and misery, and poor me, like we do when we get here. And I said, I have to stop drinking because I got to get out of this situation. I got to get out of this house. I'm not safe. And she said to me, well, can you stop drinking? And I'm like, yeah, sure, you know, because I don't know. I have alcoholism, you know. Okay, come back next week. And I didn't even make it through the week, of course, because at this point, I don't understand what's wrong with me. I don't know what my diagnosis is, and I don't know that I have no power to change it. So after being unsuccessful at not drinking and things blowing up again in the situation, I decided that I was going to go to AA because I knew that I could not possibly navigate what I knew, what I was going to have to face by leaving this situation and still be drinking. There's just no way. I just knew it. So I said, well, I guess I'm just going to have to take this plunge into whatever this is and face me without, you know, alcohol, without this life, with just rock bottom, just walk in. And that's what I did on February 15th, 2019. I was sober for 2 days when the thing blew up at the house with the guy, and I ran, which, you know, kind of a familiar coping. But I really at that time felt like that was God opening, you know, parting the seas for me, you know, and all the angels saying, she's ready, go, 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 go now, you know. And I did, and I got a suitcase, and I threw my stuff in there, and I bolted out of there. And I didn't know where to go. I'm Airbnb-ing it. I'm just completely clueless. And the only place I knew to go was to AA. And of course, I'm this self-pitying mess of pain, and oh, this person, and oh, my husband, and oh, poor me, and it's not my fault, and whatever, you know, all that. And that's what bottom looked like to me. But it was actually more than that, because I knew that that was what I was capable of. as a result of my drinking and a result of my screwed up old ideas and the way that I operated in the world. And that was enough for me to make a beginning, to just say, you know what, Kathy doesn't know how to do Kathy. Kathy doesn't know how to do life. Kathy can't function in this world like this. I knew that there was something desperately wrong that was missing, that I could not connect to, that I could not gain the power from, that I did not have access to on a consistent basis, and that all those, whatever, rinse and repeats of my life needed to change, and I didn't know how to do it. But somebody said, welcome home. And somebody said, come all the way in and sit all the way down and do what we do. And somebody said, just keep coming back. It's going to be okay. And the only time I really ever got any relief was that 1 hour I was sitting in the meeting, and even that felt like my ass was on fire. And they said, put a seatbelt on, put a helmet on, and just sit down for the ride. It's going to be a rough ride at first. And I tell you what, it was. My early sobriety sucked. It sucked. I'm in this apartment over by Triangle Club. I'm alone. I don't have community. I don't have network. I don't have God, and I don't have a solution. And you want to talk about the worst thing you can do to an alcoholic is take away their booze, take away their friends, and not give them a solution. That's why it's so hard to stay sober, because I don't have a sufficient substitute. I don't have a replacement. I don't have immediate relief. And I know I don't want to drink, but I have no idea how to stay sober. And I think it's all about this pity party, and I'm just this terrible thing that's done this awful thing. So, sorry, I just want to reset my timer because I'm getting sober now. Anyway, so yeah, so that's my story coming in. And I have no idea what alcoholism is. I have no idea what the spiritual malady is. I have no idea what I'm powerless over. I have no idea about my thoughts that are completely, you know, delusional and are, you know, old ideas, as I heard Brian share in the opening. You know, I don't know anything. And I'm just like this infant, you know, like I'm practically nonverbal, and I feel like I can't hardly even, you know, take care of myself. And that raw, terrible, just all me on me in early sobriety was nearly life-threatening. You know, I wasn't suicidal, but I thought something's got to give, because I cannot survive this. I can't look at myself. I can't look at my life. I can't see a solution. I did not know where else to go. I didn't even know if I was really an alcoholic. My alcoholism didn't look like my mother's alcoholism. It didn't look like what you people described as alcoholism. I just knew that I didn't know where else to go, and I didn't want to drink. And thank God our third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to not drink. Thank God, because I knew you couldn't kick me out. I knew that if I wanted to sit in that chair, I got to sit in that chair. And to me, I earned my place in that chair. And if I didn't feel that there was no place else to go, I wouldn't have stayed in that chair. Because believe me, I felt like I was really separate and special and different from all of you. I didn't want to connect. I didn't know how to connect, you know, because of who I think I am in those moments. So what ended up happening was I'm cobbling my way through early sobriety with this excruciating raw nerve kind of feeling with no skin on, feeling like everybody can see my real story, what I think is me every time I walk around. I can't hardly be around you because I'm terrified. I can't hardly go to the grocery store because I'm terrified. I can't go down the wine aisle. I can't call anybody that I know because I can't talk about what's really going on. I just feel like I had just this bereft, you know, feeling of being in the bottom of a pit. And I would just pray to my higher power, just please hold me. Just please get me through one day. Just please get me through one day. It was terrible. And so I got a sponsor like right away. I'm calling her, you know, not every day because I didn't know what the rules were. Nobody's telling me how I'm supposed to do this thing. And I'm just feeling like this isn't going to work for me. I can't get this. It's never going to get better. I'm losing my mind. And at 30 days sober, I decided to go to treatment. And the reason why I went to treatment, honestly, was because I needed a reprieve. I needed a support. I needed to be safe. And I needed some respite and somebody to just kind of tell me how to walk in a straight line from point A to point B for a few days at a time. I never really thought that was the answer to what was wrong with me. I just felt like I needed something just to get me through for a little while longer. And as it turns out, you know, that treatment center was not the panacea. That treatment center, and I'm sorry if there's anybody here that's been to treatment and thinks it's wonderful, I've really never experienced the results of a treatment center that offered me what I really needed, because they don't diagnose my spiritual malady. They diagnose my emotional problems. They diagnose that I have a physical allergy to alcohol. They may diagnose that I have some mental disorders. But for me, my main problem is a spiritual malady, and I need the solution that you guys offer in order to heal and to make whole what was never broken in the first place. But I didn't know that. And it says in our book, once the spiritual malady, you know, is addressed, we straighten out mentally and physically, and in that order specifically. And that's been the case for me. So I'm hobbling along with this sponsor where I'm not really feeling it. I'm not really gelling. I feel like she doesn't really have time for me. Every time I talk to her, there's like clamoring of cupboards and pots and pans and yelling at kids or in the office at work or whatever. And I'm like dying over here. Probably I was just really needy and was a victim and couldn't really hear the solution. I don't know. But I cobbled along with that, with this home group that I was kind of joining, which was kind of like therapy. It wasn't really literature based. And because I'm still just so restless and there's nothing to do with all of that, even after treatment, even after trying to bond with you guys, I thought the problem was that I just needed to feel better. I didn't know that it was going through the steps with a sponsor and making myself useful and getting out of me, something else could come in out of left field and give me some serenity. Something else could come in, and by giving away something of my recovery to someone else, I would feel worthy. It wasn't because I stood in the mirror and said, "I love you, Kathy. I love you. You're worthy," and give myself a hug. You know, no. That's not how I feel worthy and lovable. How I feel worthy and lovable is how I show up for you guys. And something can come in and kind of replace my self-absorbed, selfish, self-centered, me, you know, kind of thinking. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So then what happened was, so I'm cobbling along with this type of program, going to lots of meetings. Like, remember, I have nothing else going on. I have no little kids. I have no spouse. I have no friends. I have no family that I can really talk to. And so what do I have? I have opportunity. I have opportunity to go to lots of meetings. And that's what I do. That is my life, which, you know, that was a good thing, probably. And then I visited another group, which is now my home group. And I started hearing something different that I wasn't hearing elsewhere. And what I heard there, no offense to any other types of programs or groups or anything like that, but for me, what I heard was direction based on our big book. What I heard was relating to people in a way that I hadn't related to before. And in particular, I heard a woman speak at the podium, who's now my sponsor, say something that hit such a nerve with me that I thought, that lady's got something I want. I don't know exactly what it is, but I need a different experience. And I was ready for a different experience. I changed sponsors. I joined this home group. And I was so relieved because somebody said to me, call me every day. I was like, what? Somebody wants me to call every day? I'm like, awesome. Somebody said, please stop going to four different 12-step groups. Can you please stop doing that? Can you please just trust that all the things that you need, all the solutions that you need in your life, this design for living works? It's worked for me. We just give it a shot. I'm like, okay. Will you pray every day? Okay. Will you read this out of the big book every day? Okay. Will you call three women every day? Okay. Will you show up and do service at your home group? Will you take a position at your home group and give to your home group? Those were the things she asked me to do. And at 6 months sober, I was still so desperately in this, you know, pitiful, whatever we call it, demoralized state. I was willing to do everything she said to the best of my ability every day. Did I feel better the next day or the day after that? No. Why? Because I hadn't gone through the steps yet. So line by line by line, we're meeting every day, going through the book, getting through the steps, and I'm still like, when am I going to feel better? She says, quit taking your emotional pulse. This isn't about you getting a cookie, a reward, because you're a good girl and you're doing all the things and you get a report card that says you get an A in AA. It doesn't work like that. You don't get to have a spiritual awakening because you're a good girl. You get to have a spiritual awakening because you go through the steps and then you start working with others. You don't get 30 years of sobriety because you're a good girl. Quit paying attention to your feelings and get your feet moving. That's exactly what I needed to do. And that is exactly the same thing that I need to do every day, because I'm still a girl that gets run by my feelings. I'm still a girl that gets run by fear and character defects, because I don't understand that I have no power over that. And what I'm really looking for is a power source. And what does this have to do with drinking anyway? Really? So I should probably talk about that. So here's what it means to me. This has been my experience. As it says in the 10th step promises in our book, that the desire to drink gets removed. And it's because I've accepted a treatment plan. And my treatment plan is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that somehow, some way, by me being willing to be open to something bigger than me, whatever I want to call that, whatever, however I want to experience that, can come in and change what's not wrong with me in the first place, but I think is wrong with me. And I start doing things that I don't want to do. I start doing things I don't feel like doing. I start doing things I'm afraid of doing. Why? Not because I have power to do them, because I ask my higher power to give me the willingness and courage to do it, because it hurts too much to not do it. It hurts too much to pay the spiritual price for being stuck in me. And I don't want to go down that wormhole again. I know what that wormhole looks like and what it feels like. And I especially don't want to get thirsty again. And I'm promised, and you guys told me and you show me every single day, that if I do what you did, I will get what you have. And I won't have to drink anymore and the obsession will be removed. And I don't even have to try. I just am placed in a position of neutrality where it's just a non-issue. I can walk down the bar and whatever, the wine aisle now, and I don't even think about it. I don't even look about it. And it wasn't because I did something to make that stop. It's because I did the treatment for alcoholism that you suggested here. And oh, by the way, that fixes in a very long-term, patient, non-immediate kind of way that hole, which I define as my spiritual malady, that then I can straighten out mentally and emotionally and physically. So I address my spiritual remedy first on the daily. And the way I do that is I wake up every morning. I read 86 to 88 because that's what my sponsor said to do. I do some type of prayer and meditation, whether it's read a daily reflection. I discuss it with another person in the program. I make my list for the day, and always on that list is how do I be useful to others. And I keep doing all those things of the prayer and the calling people and the blah, blah, blah. And now I sponsor women, which honestly to me is the secret sauce that closes this loop, that really brings it full circle, because I really found, as we say, that practically nothing, you know, I don't know the line, but, you know, gives us that joy than more than working with another alcoholic. And furthermore, you know, they say you can't keep it if you don't give it away. You know, do you think I really am the kind of person that wakes up every day saying, I can't wait to give the solution away to another alcoholic. I can't wait to interrupt all the things I think are important to get on the phone. No, I'm still selfish and self-centered. I want to take a freaking nap, you know? So I pray, you know, God, please give me the willingness to get on the phone and answer that phone. And so now my feet are trained. Now I have habits. Now there are things that I do on a daily. Why? Because I've gotten results. And some of those results include occasional, momentary serenity where I'm not thinking about me all the time. And also the idea that everything I thought was wrong with me is a delusion. All the old ideas that I had, I can't change them by myself, but I can be willing to have them change, and I'm willing to take contrary actions on occasion, imperfectly, day by day by day. And I hope that's enough for now. And I hope that, you know, I hope I've been helpful to somebody. And I think I'm going to stop there. Thanks for having me tonight.
Thank you, Kathy. You reminded me of the ism in alcoholism. It was my insane spiritual malady, and the program offered a solution. And we appreciate you sharing how you experienced that.
Hey, Kathy, my name is Gary, and I'm an alcoholic. And, man, did I love that story. And, you know each other just from everyday meetings, man. And I feel like I've lived next door to most of everybody on the screen. But I could so relate to the geographical changes, the play not going my way. So I just close the curtain and go to another theater and open up a new drama. You know, thank you so much for sharing that. Thanks.
Kathy, thank you so much. I've come to know you, walk with you, and awesome. And, you know, I learn so much from you every time you share. And your story was, I mean, just mind-blowing. Thank you.
Hey, Kathy, I want to apologize for being a little late. I was occupied with something I had to do. Anyway, I was here in time to hear about your recovery. And one of the most important things that you said, and it was the same thing for me, as you found somebody that knew how to get and stay sober and would give you practical things to do and give you the treatment for alcoholism, because me just trying to not drink did not seem to work, and me finding somebody else who had recovered from alcoholism did. So I'm so glad that I was able to be here for that, and it's great to be a member of the same home group, and it's also great to be going to a lot of meetings together. So it's good to be here tonight as well. And glad I can be here at the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting.
Good to see you, Robert.
I want to speak up. Kathy, thank you so much for sharing. And I've been in prayer for you all week. So it was beautiful to see how composed you were in telling your story. And I hope to learn from you, because I came across my seventh year and I haven't done half the things you're talking about. So I take notes all the time. I'm always taking notes. So I'm going to make my own AA book pretty soon with all these notes. But thank you so much for sharing.
And I'm going to echo what Jane said. How beautifully poised and composed you are. You shared in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what you're like today. And I love the fact that you shared solution. I heard solution in every other sentence. You just did a great, great job. And I thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you so very much.
I just wanted to say thank you so much. I hear you a lot on that 7:30 a.m. morning meeting, so I know the type of wisdom you have, but your story was incredible. And I thank you so much for inspiring all of us.
Hey, Kathy, it's Laura. Yeah, so I got to see you when you first started coming to Fifth. And it's been just such an amazing journey to see you go from there to who you are today. I remember those early days and how hard it was. And you hung in there and you got a relationship with God and you've got a relationship with women in today that are doing the deal, and I'd never heard your story, you know, all the way through, so I'm glad I got to be here, and I love you.
Hey, I'm Sarah, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks so much, Kathy, for sharing your story. I really identified with it, and I've also watched you come into Fifth and do this thing. It's been really awesome to see you change over the last year plus. that I've known you. I really identified when you're talking about moving your feet and your head catching up. That was my experience as well. I kind of had a sponsor when I came in that was really big on, like, you know, taking action and not really relying on my feelings, because I had a lot of feelings when I came in. I had so much anxiety. It was really hard to live just like day to day and to stay sober in general. I just really struggled. So one, it was comforting to have someone tell me to call them every day. When you said call me every day, I was like, yeah. I remember being like, really, every day? And that saved my life, like calling a sponsor every day, showing up at her house every week, going through the book every week, getting a service commitment, and doing basic stuff like cleaning cups and picking up cigarette butts and just like the gross stuff and boring stuff that you don't really feel like doing, but like meeting early before the meeting and setting up and staying late, going to pizza, just all the stuff that just doesn't seem that attractive when you come in, but saves your life. So I'm grateful that I've gotten to know you, and I've never heard your story either, so it's been great listening. So I'll pass. Thanks.
Give me some time to receive the message of being free. Give me some time to breathe. It's not that I don't want to see. Misunderstood your words to go ahead and forget my world. Oh, and I surrender, since even darkness could be a light. Oh, and I